Good evening, James McCanny. I assume we're on the correct feed here right now. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, going right into the show tonight. And tonight's main science topic, I'll be talking about an ancient mythological character called Prometheus. And Prometheus was a champion of mankind, it was said. But the other gods were not too fond of him because he stole fire from Zeus, the king of the gods or the head of the gods in the pantheon of Greek gods. He stole fire from Zeus and gave it to man. With a great wrath, Zeus punished him by binding him to a mountain top, a rock, and every day an eagle would come and eat out his heart. And then the next day his heart would grow back, and the eagle would come the next day to eat out his heart. This was the punishment. This was just a tremendously horrible punishment for stealing fire from the gods, something that was considered to be only property of the gods, and giving it to man. Now, why was Zeus so angry about this? So at any rate, that'll be the topic of tonight's show, and it leads into some very interesting side topics dealing with the evolution of Earth, the evolution of man, deals with comets, what comets truly are, and somewhat of the same kind of issues we're dealing with today. So at any rate, stay tuned for that. First of all, a few quick announcements. If you have ordered by mail order in the last 3 months, let's say, the last 3 months, what I'd like you to do is send an email, go to the webpage, and you can get the email address there. I'll give it here a couple times during the show, and explain what exactly occurred then when you ordered, etc., because I'm just trying to get an analysis of what's happened with mail order. This is not web page ordering, strictly mail order, but I'll give you an email address. You can also find this email address on my web page. It is jmcc@jmcannyscience.com. And so once again, J-M as in Mary, C-C, at jmccanneyscience.com. I'll give that again later. But at any rate, if you ordered anything from the web page, by mail order, U.S. mail order, I'd like to hear from you and just explain what happened to your order or whatever, the time it took to fulfill or whatever. So anyway, then in a couple weeks when we get that back, I'll actually talk about it on the air. So okay, on to a couple quick announcements. Finances. I found this very interesting. And this past week in all the dog and pony show in Washington, it was announced that the United States owes more money to the international bankers. The Federal Reserve is the branch in the United States. The United States taxpayers owes more money. They owe more money to this banking system than exists in the entire world. Now, that's quite a bit of money. In other words, you could steal, you could rob, you could work as hard as you ever could work. Your kids could work as hard as they could ever work, and everybody that ever exists in the world, if they all worked as hard as they could work and took all of their money to pay off the national debt of the United States, collectively, the entire world could not pay off the debt of the United States. And so it's like always amazed me. I always wanted to meet this guy that had so much money, he could loan it to all the countries in the world. And, of course, the answer is that it's fictitious. So I hope that people out there are starting to wake up that this dog and pony show that goes on in Washington, D.C., as I've said before, the best thing to do is simply put a big fence around Washington, D.C. and just call it a prison. And maybe we'd let a few people out, the maids that clean the bathrooms or the other, a few other people there. But apart from that, pretty much everybody there, just leave them there and leave them arrested for good. Throw away the key. Because it's the criminal center of the United States. Excuse me. The point I want to make is that this kind of thing has happened before in the world. Captivities of ancient history were performed by the same mechanism. How to come in from outside, create a foreign currency or a phony currency, and then work on the politicians through their greed and self-interest to finally capture the entire wealth of a country, a country that's as powerful and supposedly independent as the United States. And then how do you keep the people fooled? All of this has happened before. They control the presidents. If they don't, presidents don't cooperate, they shoot them in public sometimes. They basically control the banking throughout the world. They have their own private police force called the CIA, which can go into your telephone, go into your records, go into any computer records, all in the name of fighting terrorism, and find out who might oppose the bankers. So if what I'm saying is that, say you decided one day we've got to get rid of these people, just remember, they control the president, they control the Congress, they control the court system, they control the chain of command all the way down through the banking communities, which run the local governments, the state governments, and the political feeder systems that feed into this all. Have a good story going that really has fooled the public. They can peer into your computer at a given notice. They can listen to your phone line. They can blow up buildings if they want. They can shoot a rocket, have somebody sitting in the United States and shoot a deadly rocket at a wedding party halfway across the world and kill all the people there. They own the radio stations. They own the news media. They can draw, they own radio shows that are very big, powerful radio shows that are on the air every day, whose main purpose is to draw in people and to give a partial story, to make it sound like they're really doing something, to make it sound like they're really doing something, they're really on your side, but what they're really there for is to give misinformation. And when the chips are down, watch those same radio stations where they're going to really start firing out the misinformation. They will not talk about the very most important topics. Let's see. There are other websites that they post in which very controversial topics are posted, and when you click on those topics and read them, your name goes on a list to identify you as a person who is conscious of this particular topic or possibly agrees with it. But all in all, these people are very fearful. They're doing all of this because of fear. But the one thing they fear most of all, of everything out there, because they can control people, they can target groups. If any splinter group starts to take off and move away and understand and try and move out of this, they can liquidate them and have the next day the national press covering them like a bunch of crazy lunatics. So they have power to do this. They have the power to make people and destroy people, politicians, etc. So the point is that the one thing they fear is called Planet X. It's the Great Equalizer. The Great Equalizer, Planet X. It's the one thing that would make everybody turn away from them. What do you think? The one thing they want, the one thing they desire, is everybody dependent on them, the psycho leaders of the banking communities which run the world, which have this tremendous intelligence network that feeds them information. They own scientists. They own the scientists. They own the work that comes out of this. They can pit one country against another to cause wars. They can cause the destruction of entire large countries. But what's the one thing they fear? It's a little thing called Planet X. And that's, like I say, because they can't control it. And they know that if something like this happens, if a large comet comes into the solar system, the last thing they want is everybody out there, where you people listening to this show, the last thing they want is for anybody out there, let alone large groups of people, to understand that, first of all, it's going to look like a huge comet, that comets aren't dirty snowballs, and that should draw your attention away from your attention on them. Do you understand? It's a very simple equation, understanding their paranoia. And the one thing they have no control over, it's called the Great Equalizer, because if something comes through this solar system, they are not going to have any control over it. And they already know that 99% of the people are going to look up and go, these people don't have any control. The government isn't going to be able to do anything about this. The bankers and all their loans, all their military, all their battleships, all their warplanes, all of the political maneuvering they've been through over the last 100 years to try and captivate audiences and entire countries to worship them, all of that will go down the drain in a split second because people will look up. So now you can understand, you should understand how absolutely, utterly important it is for them to maintain bad science, bad information, political dog and pony shows that keep your attention to make you think that the economy is the most important thing and that, the Congress just approved a new budget and we have to up the limit on our borrowing and that they're really concerned about your future. What a joke. It's just a big dog and pony show, and they all work for the central banking community. They're not working for you. But at any rate, the point is, the one thing they do fear is a little thing called Planet X. And that's why the huge, absolutely massive amount of misinformation coming out recently, this comet Ellen issue, people keep seeing, and this keeps popping up on the internet, and it's a non-issue. There is no major issue with a thing called comet Ellen. Most people cannot even find it. So we're still remiss to believe that this thing even exists. It's certainly not a brown dwarf. It's certainly not Planet X. It's just all of the claims on the internet are just bogus and false. But someone is using the dating that supposedly goes with the orbit of Comet Ellen to plan events. And so there's something going on. Somebody is planning some big events and they have you in mind, but it's not going to happen because of a little comet. Big comets can affect things, but Comet Ellen is not a big comet, because if it were in the alleged position that it's in right now, you could all go out in your backyard on a nice summer evening and look at it and see it with your own two eyes. You wouldn't need binoculars. You wouldn't need anybody to even point it out, because it would be big and obvious, and there it is. I don't know if some of you remember Hale-Bopp, which was kind of a medium-sized comet. And so, at any rate, it was obvious. You didn't need an astronomy professor to go out and say, there it is. Look through this little hole in the telescope. No, you could go out in your backyard on a half cloudy night and see it. So, and this would be much bigger. So the whole story about Comet Ellen is contrived. But why does it keep getting airtime? Why do they keep making predictions and dates? And, of course, I've given lectures before. Last week, the show, I aired a repeat. It was a pre-recorded show from last April talking about dating selection, the selection of dates using prime numbers, numerology, and astrology, and how the people that run these operations, remember they need scientists, for example, the earthquake in Japan. Just imagine the number of engineers, scientists, and other people like the Navy to actually pull off this kind of event where they had artificial earthquakes, where they had tsunamis generated by nuclear blasts down in caverns in the ocean. This isn't a small operation. This is not something that you and I could do. This takes major maneuvering. So someone has a powerful set of hands controlling this entire issue. So let's go back to the announcement that the U.S. owes more money to the European bankers than exists in the entire world. So that would give you a feeling for how this thing has to end. But don't go to your president, because he's not going to end it. Don't write your congressman. You may as well go write a piece on a piece of paper and throw it out the window. You get more response. So at any rate, just wanted to talk about that, the death grip that the world bankers have on this world with their phony money. A little bit of conversation about weather. We have announcement today, 38 days in a row in Waco, Texas, over 100 degrees. Dallas, I believe, is the one that everybody talks about just because it's a big city. 35 days in a row, over 100 degrees. What they haven't been talking about too much is the extensive winds that go along with this heat wave. There have been incredible winds throughout the past year, and they're really going unnoticed because of the heat. And so I have mentioned before, is there a way that someone could control climate? My weather book talks about weather, how you can control weather, the manipulation using laser satellites, but could someone control weather to the point where you could force 100 degree weather for 38 days in a row? Well, the answer is yes. And the way you would do it is you would just force warm air up from the lower latitudes, from the equatorial regions, and just keep a wind pattern moving northwards. The very simple fact is, I've explained this in the weather book, that when the wind's from the south, it's warm. When the wind is from the north, it's cooler. And this is one of the big factors of temperature. That's why global warming specialists really have not done anybody a service. They took the easy route. They talk about global warming. Warming is a issue with heat content, and many times has very little to do with temperature. So the fact that the temperature is rising, for example, if you have very dry air at a higher temperature contains less heat than cooler air with a lot of water content. So heat and temperature are very unrelated terms, but the scientists are mixing them because they get grant money. So, and of course, they switch the argument to global climate change, because then, no matter where the temperature went, they'd still be right and still get their grant money. But the reality is that right now the United States is, except they said today, 15 states are unfit to live in. The crops are drying up, and of course the Congress is, the main effort is to try and cure financial problems that stem from a little town called New York, and all of the maneuvering with money that goes on there. And of course that influences Washington, D.C. On to another topic, the Obama plan. I just can't get more ridiculous. They don't know what to do with nuclear waste. This is the spent nuclear fuel rods that come out of nuclear reactors. much of this is partially spent. It's kind of like if you had, well, let's put it this way. Once you get done with the nuclear fuel rods, they still have a lot of potential energy in them, and they continue to give off heat. So what do they do with them? They have to put them. They're not getting efficient energy production out of them, so they store them. But the problem is you have to cool them. So the more you run the nuclear reactors, the bigger your cooling facility is that has to keep these containers that hold the nuclear fuel rods, you have to keep them cool. So that's a bigger energy problem all the time. So what they want to do is somehow stick these in a hole in the ground and pretend that they have gone away, thus solving the problem, just like they solve other problems, out of sight, out of mind, and problem solved. So Obama, in his infinite ignorance, has asked little towns across the country to volunteer to to put nuclear waste in your town. And I can just see some people in the city going, you know, I got old Uncle Frank's farm out there, doggone, we could get some money if we could get them to store that nuclear waste out there. You know, we're not using Uncle Frank's farm anymore, and be a way to make money. And so at any, I can just see it happening, and then they go to the city, and you know, the city has some guy, or the county, whatever, has a guy in there they can pay off a little bit, and happy to invite in all of the nuclear waste that you want. Just put it right there on Uncle Frank's farm. But don't mention it to the neighbors over there, because they might not like it exactly. I can just see this happening. But what a ridiculous idea to ask neighborhoods and towns to vote. And I can't imagine any community where you would have 100% agreement. Yeah, bring everybody's nuclear waste right here. It just shows what a moron this guy is. Well, and he shouldn't even be in the president's office anyway, but that's another issue. The point is, what a ridiculous proposal. Now it's patriotic to bring nuclear waste into your yard. On to the next topic. At CERN, the European accelerator, they've been doing experiments, and the one of the things they've recently discovered, they're claiming, is that clouds would be seeded by cosmic rays. Cosmic rays are high-energy protons that come from cosmic extraplanet out of our planet sources. And what we found out is the sun happens to be a fairly good source of these. That's one thing that actually I discovered back in the 90s with one day the SOHO satellite lit up like a Christmas tree, and it had cosmic rays. And shortly thereafter, there was seen a big solar burst on the sun. It was very clear that those cosmic rays were coming from our very own sun. And so all the timing was there. It was very clear. But at any rate, that's another story. The point is that now scientists have measured what they believe is the seeding of clouds with cosmic rays. But the one thing, the point is that the head of CERN has told the scientists they cannot publish or talk about this. Well, that's one interesting story, but then that's one way to get the public's attention. Anytime you say, oh, you can't talk about this, then all of a sudden you're going to have the public's attention, like maybe there's something real involved here. So at any rate, the point is that I don't care how you seed the clouds, you're not going to have any clouds at all developing unless you have a vertical electric field. Something that I talk about, that's the source of power and energy for storm systems like hurricanes, tornadoes, thunderstorms, lightning. All of this is driven from outside the planet. But in Tier 2 science, you can never talk about that. So now you have cosmic rays causing clouds. You see the how strange this gets? So you have Tier 2 scientists who can't talk about bad science, but they're actually releasing it. You see, they don't say you can't say anything and then not release it. They release the information and say you can't talk about this. It's a very subtle way of getting the public's attention and diverting the issue once again. Why? Because they can never cross that line and talk about the vertical electric field powering storms, because, gee, we could use that same source of power to power our energy needs, and it would be a very natural, talk about a green source of power. It's power that's already being used. It comes down to us in very destructive form, in the form of tornadoes and hurricanes. A single hurricane would have enough energy to power our industries for many, many years. Excuse me. There again, you see the mix of bad science, what's released to the public and how it has to be released. But then when this gag order went out, they were saying that now you can't say this because it's politically incorrect, because it goes against the politically correct people who now are in funding and getting funding, etc., for climatology, for the warming of the climate or global climate change. So they can't say anything about cosmic rays forming clouds because that could affect the people who get funding for climate change, you see. And so you see how the funding drives science and what they can say, what's politically correct, and they come out right and say it. But they will never say that this also does not explain where clouds come from. Seeding a cloud is one thing. Having a cloud develop completely is a totally different issue. And the clouds would never develop 100%. They wouldn't develop at all. I don't care how many cosmic rays you have coming in to seed those clouds. They're not going to develop unless you have a vertical electric field. The next question is, where does the vertical electric field come from? Well, there's no source on Earth, so you have to look to outer space. You have to look to the fact that outer space has electric fields. Well, if there's electric fields out there, wouldn't we notice them? Oh, well, yeah, everything out there would be discharging that electric field. The questions go on and on. So you can see they never can cross that first line in the sand. They always have to keep the arguments on this side. That's what I call Tier 2 science. The science that's the garbage science that they have to pawn off on the public so that you believe that everything on Earth just happens by itself. Another great example, there was a woman this past week claiming that the floor of the Gulf of Mexico is rising. And that I would actually find believable. And if they're measuring that, then that's certainly something just like the floor of Yellowstone volcano is rising. And so I wouldn't doubt at all that the floor of the Gulf of Mexico is rising, that underneath there's a huge volcanic hot spot, and that when the oil comes spewing out at high pressure, like with the BP oil spill, okay, now you start throwing chemicals on that, forcing the oil to cover the entire Gulf of Mexico. That provides an insulator, so the nice warm flow from down beneath through the sand into the water that drove the Atlantic warm Gulf Stream up that warmed Europe and England, that's cut off. All that heat now is bottled up in the Gulf of Mexico, so I wouldn't be surprised that it's starting to rise and it's starting to have other little holes pop out where oil and other chemicals, volcanic chemicals, are seeping through, causing an even bigger mess than they had before. But of course, don't tell BP that, because they'll just keep pouring, and the government here just keeps letting them pour chemicals in there to try and keep the oil down, because they only have to account for oil that reaches the surface, remember. They only have to be responsible for oil that reaches the surface. Okay, so at any rate, let me see. I've got a couple of other quick announcements. I already talked about CERN. Let me give this one an honorable mention. Someone sent this in. A 2,625 foot tall solar tower, the tallest tower in the world, to produce 200 megawatts of power. And this is a mirrored system to be built, $750 million structure in the middle of the Arizona desert. And one might think, oh, green energy, isn't this remarkable? But the end result is that it's going to take years to build this, and it's just a very small trickle of energy. 200 megawatts of power is nothing. That's a very small amount of energy, but look at the problems here. Okay, so this operates in sunlight. The sunlight only shines in Arizona in the wintertime. It's only there 10 hours a day. In the summer, it's there for a longer period, but maybe 12 hours a day or 13 hours a day, but it's not viable for all of that time. So you only have a window of maybe 8 hours a day when this will be collecting and converting energy into electricity. Well, what do you do with the electric need all the rest of those hours during the day? You still have to have a plant there that then cuts in and produces power. So this design is absolutely absurd. You still have to have a power plant, and power plants don't work like that. You don't just switch them on and all of a sudden have 200 megawatts of power and then switch it off while the solar power unit is working. But who approves these? This is all done by politicians and environmental companies. It is just a big... It's what I've talked about before, the myth of alternative energy. But what happens? All of the greenies out there go, wow, this is great. We're going to have clean power. But really, we're not, because there's 10 other reasons. But 200 megawatts is not a lot of power. This is about, less than 100 wind towers. But when you see the colossus facility that they have to build, and then the heat engines and everything that goes with this, and it only produces during the sunlight hours of the day, 200 megawatts, the whole thing is absurd. But, as I said before, this is just to keep that, I can see the energy industries supporting this, because what does it do? It gives people false hope that something is on the way, that green energy is going to save the planet. It would, I can't even tell you, it would take about, let me see, I could do a quick calculation here. It would take about 7 million of these such facilities to even start putting a dent in the Earth's energy requirement. And that's, and like I say, that really wouldn't work, because when this is, the sun is not shining on it, it doesn't work, so it doesn't produce any power. So now you still have to have all the power supplies and power plants that you have now, but you'd have to power them up instantly when the sun goes down, and then power them off when the sun comes up in the morning. Just absurd. Nobody is thinking it's a political boondoggle, but it's something that and I see these every day. There was another one, I'll just quick mention it. There's a new, it's a hybrid wind turbine to maximize turbine performance. That's how it's built. But what it is, it's a small propane generator that's down in the base of the windmill. So the wind isn't blowing, it runs on propane and runs a little generator. That's not green, that's not a great invention, and it's not what it's being billed for. Something that somehow augments or improves the performance of a wind tower. You see the absurdity of what's going on in the energy industry today. I've already talked about the volunteering. For volunteer your communities for nuclear waste, I can just see it. And here's a good article I just saw in that the volcano that is erupting right now, I believe in Iceland, has put out more CO2 in 4 days than all of the savings of CO2 emissions that have occurred in the past probably 10 years. But the point is that CO2, the whole issue of greenhouse and global warming and CO2, is a bogus argument. It doesn't work. Let me just give you a quick example. Venus, the planet, that's where all this started, the greenhouse effect, and Carl Sagan, one of the worst scientists that ever crawled out of a university, claimed because of the high temperature of Venus that it was due to a greenhouse effect due to carbon dioxide, the heavy carbon dioxide atmosphere of Venus. It was soon discovered for many reasons that it couldn't possibly be the cause of the high temperature of Venus. So if the greenhouse effect does not work on Venus and with its huge atmosphere, then how could it possibly ever work on Earth? With its very meager atmosphere of carbon dioxide. So it's just once again, but it's good for funding. It keeps the universities and all the scientists going to meetings, and they can they've gotten many decades of good use out of that. Just one other quick story that came across my desk, and I think this is very, very interesting, that there are people now who are starting to question the sinking of the Titanic, that it's starting to, and this is a story, I'll just run it by you, you can judge it for what you think, but the captain of the ship was, that's a complicated story, but the end result is that they're saying that the Titanic did not sink by hitting an iceberg, that there was another ship that rammed it that night, that the sinking of the Titanic was intentional, and that the very interesting, I noticed the very last statement in the article, that the, let me get the names of these people, that it was Astor, and who were the wealthy people on the ship that night. I'm trying to see if I can find this here. I remember Astor was one of them, but there were three financial giants on the ship that went down with the ship, and these just happened to be the people who opposed the Federal Reserve. Now, this was in April of 2012, and remember there was, or 1912, I mean, and remember that it was the next year when the Federal Reserve was installed. So these wealthy people were going to the United States to and apparently was J.P. Morgan himself who gave orders for the ship to be run at 22 knots at full speed. So it's a very interesting story. Look into it if you have time. I'm seeing the author here, John Hamer, henrymakeout.com. Okay, at any rate, on to tonight's show topic. I wanted to talk about Prometheus. Now, Prometheus was a mythological character. He was brother of Atlas, so he was one of the Titans in Greek mythology. He stole the fire from Zeus. Now, Zeus was the top god of the Greeks, and so Prometheus stole fire from him and gave it to man. Why would Zeus be so upset? Well, you first of all, you steal something from the top god of the whole group. Well, of course he's going to be angry. But what did that cause? I have a little bit of different interpretation tonight, because what happened to man once that he had fire? And of course, this happened during the time when the Greeks were engaged in a war. So the first use of fire was for warfare, basically to make they could make better metals. Just think of all of the uses of fire in warfare. Remember that much later, around 1200 A.D. in the Mideast, they started to understand the properties of oil, which was just sitting at the time in pools on the surface of the ground. They learned how to refine oil, to separate out the various properties of of the what they called naphtha, and then this was given as gifts or traded, and typically used in for military purposes. For example, a big ball of twine mixed with this naphtha rolling down a hill on fire was a very effective warfare weapon, or shooting it with a sling, or like a mechanical arm. But look at the chain of social events and evolution that happened once man had fire. First of all, the search for better fuels. The search for more efficient ways to burn, the use of oil, and of course leading all the way up to nuclear power. That's why when energy and the people who were in charge of the world had a keen handle on energy. Remember that a guy named Tesla came along at the beginning of the 1900s and learned how to trap energy from basically the atmosphere. And that's what my second book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, talks about, and then I further developed that topic in the weather book. Basically understanding, probably from ancient texts, how to build a tower to extract energy out of the atmosphere, basically to connect electronically to the ionosphere to tap into the same energy source that drives storm systems. Tesla didn't understand about the solar wind. He just knew that vertical electric field was there and how to tap into it. So basically, the issue is once man had the handle on energy, on oil, on these various methods of burning fuels, whether it was coal, whether it was propane, whether it was the gases that come out of the ground, whether it was oil or its derivatives, then the search was on for more efficient ways to use it, how to make a hotter fire, to make harder metals. And then, of course, when nuclear came along, the push was to harness the nuclear energy, first of all, just to make bombs to blow things up, but then as a ultimate heat source. And, of course, the first way that nuclear energy was used was for warfare. And so you see that the Zeus, understanding the mentality and the weakness of man, was very angry at Prometheus because he gave them a tool that would allow them to evolve in a very, what was considered to be an unnatural way. Just imagine if warfare had been limited and was still limited, where the leader of the country had to go out and march on a field with a sword or hand weapons and fight. This was, everything has become mechanized. You can control energy, oil, burning gasoline or diesel fuel in a motor, and you can get a much bigger hunk of hardware across the your opponent. So the one-upmanship of warfare equipment was enhanced by the fact that initially that first initial wave of water. Excuse me, 1 minute. Excuse me, I'm sorry about that. I'm losing my voice here. Okay, I think I got it back now. That the combined efforts to harness energy, different ways to use it, were to use it for warfare. And so you could see Zeus probably could see all of this. So Prometheus giving fire to man was really not a good thing. The question is, here's the question, did nature have another way? Was Zeus right? Was Prometheus wrong? Prometheus was looked at, now remember, Karl Marx really was very interested in Prometheus. In Prometheus, in many aspects, was the so-called patron saint of Karl Marx, of socialism, because of the benefactor of man kind of philosophy, which Marx believed himself to be a benefactor of society, when in actuality He was a crazy nutcase. But the point was, he viewed himself as a benefactor and therefore looked to Prometheus and the image of Prometheus. But is there a way in nature, this is the question, this is the focus, is there a way in nature to do all of the things we need to do, transportation, communication, run machinery to help our lives, transportation into outer space, living in a natural way along with nature's own energy source. Digging things up out of the ground, as I said, the first fire, you could burn wood, that's great, but immediately you're going to look for higher energy sources, and pretty soon it's not going to take long to search out oil, to search out the other coal. Coal burns very hot, not because it's dead, decayed, dried plant matter, but it contains a tremendous amount of oil and chemicals. That's why coal burns very hot. It's just another form. It's like a sponge containing oil. And so that's why coal is a very powerful fuel. And then, of course, it cannot match nuclear, but nuclear, once again, you're digging something up out of the ground. It's not a natural form of energy in the universe. It's an artificial form of energy. So as the people that think that nuclear energy is green are, in my book, completely crazy. It's not a green energy. Nuclear energy is no more green than coal or oil. It's, in fact, nuclear energy is the most destructive, pollutant energy form possible in the universe. But at any rate, does nature have a better way to power our needs? This is actually getting to the point of the book I released a year ago, actually yesterday, a year ago, August 3rd, 2010, I released The Diamond Principle. And one of the main points in the book was that nature has its natural ways for man to easily work and succeed, but you have to follow a plan. And constant warfare is not part of the plan. If you searching for more energy sources so that you can run your Navy and Army and Air Force more efficiently, this is not exactly what nature had in mind. So at any rate, a lot of times war is seen as a good thing from higher up because it controls populations. But if the Earth expands and has too many people, then that would be a signal to me, looking in nature's way, is that, gee, there's a three-dimensional space out there that's infinite, and we can populate it, but we need to know nature's ways. We need to know the methods that nature has set aside so that we can easily live in outer space, that we can easily get there and maneuver around outer space and eventually populate the stars, our birthright to the stars. So this is one other thing, that the people who control money in this world also control energy, because everybody needs energy. We're addicted to energy. We use far more energy than is reasonable by any stretch of the imagination. And so the people in charge know that. And so they keep everybody driving to work every day, driving that SUV back and forth in lines of traffic that the highways are so crowded with cars they can't move anymore. You couldn't put one more car on the highway and have anything move. It's beyond absurd. That's the point it's at today. But everybody thinks this is normal. This is just okay. The situation is that we absolutely can't continue. We've borrowed ourselves into owing more money than exists on the face of the planet. How strange a situation. But all of this is absolutely unnecessary. This actually comes in and brings in a new topic, because where did the oil come from? Where did the coal come from? And it turns out that leads to a deeper question: where did the atmosphere of the Earth come from? Scientists don't know today. They try and cobble together a phony story that the Earth's atmosphere, that small comets, dirty snowball comets, crashed into Earth and provided us with water. It doesn't answer any of the questions that really are posed by the simple question, doesn't answer any of the questions. The simplest, where does the water come from? Where does the atmosphere come from? Little dirty snowballs don't have any atmosphere, so it can't account for any of the atmosphere we see. And the ones, the dirty snowballs, supposedly, that we have visited, according to NASA, don't have any ice at all, according to their own measurements. So there really isn't any dirty snowball at all. Their comets are not dirty snowballs. But you see that they have to maintain this facade because, as I explain in the weather book, the comets also explain that the energy, the oil, comes from outer space. It rains in from when we pass through comet tails from large comets. These are the very large comets talked about in history. That's why they have to destroy the history of major planetary events back in history. That's why they have to destroy the name and work of Velikovsky and try and make it sound crazy. And that's why they have to have all of the crazy, completely incorrect science revolving around Comet Elenin. You see that they are working overtime, absolutely overtime, to destroy this message to the public. They do not want the public even to have a hint of this. So you're not going to find this information on the daily top talk radio shows that you listen to. In fact, they will never, ever, ever talk about these topics. These are the most important topics on the planet. Why won't they talk about them? Because their shows are owned. You don't get that big in, with a radio show that big without having some controlling factors. And in this world, when you're that big, it's like becoming president or anything else. You are owned. You don't get there by just being a swell person. I'm sorry to say that. So at any rate, where did Earth's atmosphere come from? Well, Earth itself was a large comet during its formative stages. That's how solar systems form, by the capture of large comets. And the comets are attracting material by electrical forces, and that's where the atmosphere comes from. That's where the oil comes from. It's an integral part of this production that nature has set aside. So those are things that are there. And so anybody that could step back, and like Zeus, who would be basically overseeing type of person, or you could say anybody with any intelligence who knows how nature functions, would know that giving fire to a race like the human race with the greed and the petty ways would be absolutely the wrong thing to do, because the first thing they're going to use it for is warfare, and that's going to continue and continue and continue. And the second thing it's going to be used for is control of the population by the people in power, to force energy onto the people and then control that energy. When they tore down Tesla's towers in the early 1900s, he was drawing free electricity out of the atmosphere. When they found out that that's what he was doing, they tore those down, and it wasn't Westinghouse that went out and did that himself. He sent a crew of goons out. So they have their goons that do all of the hard labor for them. That's part of the formula. I talk about that in the Diamond Principle. It's just like the highway patrolman today, who sits there and simply gives out traffic speeding tickets all day, not creating any kind of safety, simply fleecing the public. It's another form of invisible taxation, very safe for politicians to put 60 more highway patrolmen on the streets and have them fleece the public one by one than to raise taxes. It's just a lot cleaner. It's not quite so visible. But at any rate, the issue with where does the Earth's atmosphere come from, the fact that comets are not dirty snowballs. These are all ideas that have to be included to understand the properties of the world. Where does oil come from? In fact, where does nuclear fuel come from in the Earth? It's dug up. Uranium is an element that's found in Earth, and typically in a yellow powder that's found in Earth. There are certain reserves around the world in a couple very distinct locations, and this then is refined and refined until you get it into a form that you can either make a bomb or you can use it in a nuclear reactor make other elements, nuclear elements, and then ultimately, as I said, used for warfare. But all of this unnecessary, all of these forms of energy, for example, I've talked about the electromagnetic propulsion systems that could be used for flight, that both in the atmosphere, out of the atmosphere, and to move large spaceships around outer space. There are electrical currents in space, and there's a very natural mechanism. I talk about it in the Diamond Principle, where you can grab onto one of these currents and ride it. You can either accelerate or you can decelerate using an electric current that is very commonly found in outer space. Where do the electric currents from? They're not magical. They're not just there. There has to be a source of electrical energy that powers these electrical currents, and that's in the fusion engines, in the stars, in the galaxies. And then these currents tend to follow the path along the stars. For example, if you have a galactic nucleus and it's putting out a fusion wind of protons, the return current from that wind is going to come flowing down the galactic arms. I talk about this in one of my DVD lectures that is available on the webpage. So at any rate, did Prometheus do something good for man, or was Zeus right that he should never have given fire to man? Just remember, if you ordered anything by mail order over the last 3 months, I'd like your commentaries. Send it to jmcc@jmcanniscience.com. You can also find that on the webpage, that email address. So this is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.